Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 146 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It's been a while for me, but my guest was actually here more recently than I was, which is an interesting thing to say out loud on my podcast. Eric Cole, what's up, man?
Hey, man. I just filled in temporarily just because that was when JJ was available before he went to the winter meeting. So I'm happy to not be on full-time hosting duties and just getting to enjoy talking baseball.
Yeah, I will say that I enjoyed that. I'm usually going to be here, but I really thought it was better without me because it was a prospect heavy podcast. It's not my favorite thing, but I liked listening to it, and you guys did a great job. So if you guys somehow missed that podcast, please go back and listen to that. It's the most recent show in our feed. But that show combined with the complete and utter lack of news was kind of the reason why we didn't do a podcast last week. And I thought, honestly, that we would have something to talk about that was new between, you know, 2 weeks ago when I recorded and now, but really, really kind of don't. There's some news-ish stuff, some buzz kind of stuff, but nothing new in the winter meetings. So the winter meetings were very quiet, and as a result of that, we don't have an overflowing amount of content. But because it's you and I, Eric, we're going to have plenty to talk about because it's just kind of what we do here. And I guess the headliner of the week is JT Realmuto for like the fifth time in the offseason. Some weirdness here. Nothing necessarily has changed because he's still available. He's still on the Marlins. The Braves might have interest in him, but there's been sort of like a source off between Craig Mish and Mark Bowman, which I'm enjoying. I like Bowman a lot. And there's been a lot of back and forth between those two gentlemen. Also a lot of the fan base kind of asking for our opinions on what's going on, knowing full well that, you know, I'm not super sourced and I'm just going to kind of read between the lines. But before we get into the specifics of what's been reported, what's been like your general reaction here? I think it's been kind of entertaining, but nothing huge has changed. I know there's been some like firm pronouncements on both sides. And because of that being on both sides, I don't feel like anything's actually changed here.
Yeah, it's funny that like it's not like the Braves have interest and like both reporters are kind of like, it's like, you know, like 60-40, you know, like, well, the Braves are kind of interested, but not really. And then it's like the Marlins, you know, on the Marlins side, like, well, the Braves are pretty interested, but it's not a done deal. It's like Craig Mish saying, like, the Braves are the favorites to land Realmuto, and it's Bowman saying the Braves aren't interested in him at all and have moved on. And it's like that absolution, for one, it seems very much like, you know, two sides leaking information out, trying to both drum up interest in Realmuto to drive up a price versus, you know, trying to dumb down the interest and drive down the price. And I think that any rational person would see this as the Braves would be stupid to not be interested in Realmuto and have an offer out there. But it seems like that they put their offer out there. They're interested and they're willing to move on if that's going to be something that the Marlins are interested in. The Marlins want to get a better price than that. But they also know the Braves have the ability to pay more if they really wanted to. So they're trying to kind of goad that side into paying more because they're trying to drop up all this interest. And I mean, it's just a media game to me. I think the Braves are interested in Realmuto. I also think that they have a set cap as to how much they're willing to commit to making a move there. I also think that that market is one that is dictating what they might be doing for other moves, because once you move prospects, you can't move them twice because they're gone. So like they have to kind of make a decision here relatively quickly in terms of the trade market, what they're going to do. But at the end of the day, like it's more silly to me. It's just, I wake up every morning and I know that one of the Marlins beat writers, and it's likely to be Craig Mish, is going to say the Braves are interested in Realmuto, and that Bowman an hour later is going to completely disavow it. And it's funny to me.
It's very entertaining. I mean, I know I'm definitely more into the sourced game on the basketball side. I'm closer to that, but I also don't understand how this works. most of the time, the media stuff doesn't really matter at all. What gets leaked for a reason most of the time. But at the end of the day, very, very rarely does this stuff actually matter to the negotiations that are taking place behind the scenes. You know, just for a little bit of housekeeping here, Craig Mish has now said the Braves appear to be a slight favorite. That's a quote from him, from Real Muto. As of a couple of hours ago, he placed a 35% hypothetical odds chance on the Braves getting Real Muto. That was the highest percentage of any team in the league.
I love the odd, the actual numbers he's giving.
The fake odds, yeah, it's always great for me as well. And then Bowman on the other side, the most recent thing from Bowman was that he has said the Braves have not had any discussions regarding JTR Real Muto within the past 5 days, and they do not plan to have any further talks with the Marlins regarding the All-Star catcher. And after that, he says, the Braves have done their due diligence by monitoring Real Muto's market, but it hasn't been a priority since McCann signed, and Anthopoulos' choice to voluntarily attend meetings in Denver on Wednesday was a sign the teams were not engaged in serious talks during the winter meetings. Lastly, the last thing he wrote, this is not a tweet, but an actual post that he wrote, I believe on Saturday. He says, and I quote, a source said Saturday night the Braves exited the winter meetings with the understanding that there will not be any further reason to for them to discuss trading for the Marlins all-star catcher, end quote. So someone is telling Mark Bowman repeatedly that they don't want Real Muto. I am inclined to believe, as you sort of laid out earlier, that the Braves have an offer on the table, or at least they had an offer on the table. They would probably like to have JT Real Muto on their roster, but they're not going to change their offer, at least right now. They're at least posturing like they're not going to change their offer. And that's kind of where we stand. It's the back and forth is definitely interesting in a lot of ways, but it's kind of where we are now. I know the Braves would like to have him, but, you know, with Flowers and McCann on the roster, it's not a gigantic need for the Braves. It would obviously be a massive upgrade. And I think, honestly, Real Muto is probably the best player available that we absolutely know is available. Like, there are guys, I'm sure, that are available that we just don't know it. But Real Muto, we know, is available. Like, everyone knows that. By the way, the market also changed a little bit today because the Mets signed Wilson Ramos.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That takes them out of the running, and that was one of the teams that was kind of, like, thought to be in it. So, if anything, that helps the Braves with their leverage or the Marlins' lack of leverage. But, again, like, we're guessing here, but I don't think either side is correct's the wrong word. I don't think the Braves are completely out by any means. And I don't think the Marlins side is not quite as firm in the Braves side as the Marlins side is making it sound, if that makes sense. So, like, it's kind of in the middle, as most things are, but that's where I am with it. I mean, do you have anything else to add? One of the questions we got, by the way, was from Doc Herbert. Shouts to Doc, who's a Talking Chop staffer with us. And he says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how sick are you of hearing JT Real Muto's name? And I said 27 right away.
It's pretty high. And it's not because, like, I'd love to have him. And I also wouldn't be heartbroken if, like, another team, like, it was just over. It's just this constant back and forth that's just, it's so... You can only talk about it so much. It's just kind of like, yeah, he's a really good catcher. The Braves would really do well to have him. They would probably need to give up a decent bit, but probably, you know, there is definitely a limit to that.
Yeah, I mean, behind the scenes even, like, there was the new report from Mish over the weekend, and we kind of debated writing about it just because it was kind of the same thing, but it was new and it was a little bit stronger from Mish. So we wrote about it a little bit. I think Scott did that. Yeah. And I'm okay with it. I mean, it's news-ish. It's not news. It's rumor mill, hot stove stuff. It's really dead right now, so we're talking about it. But at the end of the day, the Braves don't need... I mean, I think you and I have both talked about our individual feelings on Real Muto multiple times about an actual, you know, player acquisition here. He's very good. He'd be an upgrade on what the Braves have. I am scared of catchers in general. That's kind of where I am. But if the Braves pull off a trade for him at a reasonable price, you won't hear me criticize it. If they go overboard, which they're not going to do, I don't think. That's pretty clear at this point. The Braves are not going to overpay, and they shouldn't, because the Marlins have no leverage whatsoever.
Yeah,
everyone knows they're going to trade him.
and if an overpay was going to happen,
it would have already happened.
because,
I totally agree. I mean,
it's just not.
Yeah, we could probably leave it there unless you have something else to add. We had to leave with that because it's by far the biggest news. I put out the mailbag call this week, and like half the questions were about Real Muto. And I'm like, guys, if you're not listening to the podcast already, and maybe not. So if you're a new listener, welcome aboard. Hopefully we just tackle that all. But I know my thoughts are out there. Your thoughts are out there. Scott's thoughts are out there. Everybody that's been on the podcast for the last 2 months, I'm pretty sure we talked about Real Muto on every podcast for like 2 months, which is crazy. But I think it's true.
He is good. Braves would be better if they had him. the trade to get him would be very expensive, and how expensive matters quite a bit. Those are my thoughts.
That is it. And if a deal happens, or if something new happens, we'll talk about it next week. But yeah, we'll leave it there for now.
The trade's going to happen in like 20 minutes. You know that, right?
Oh, now. I'm sure it's going to be Monday morning. I mean, we have a famous track record on this podcast of Monday morning news. The Donaldson-McCann thing was a Monday after we recorded on Sunday. If that happens, we'll do an emergency pod. But until then, here we are. Okay, one more thing on the just pure hot stove stuff. And we'll actually a couple more probably after that. But Anthopoulos told Mark Bowman earlier, probably about a week ago now, maybe even like during winter meetings, maybe early on in the process, that I'm not sure how much he was serious about this, but he kind of said the Braves might not do anything until January. Like, he mentioned December as a timetable. That was the middle of winter meetings, and now they've done nothing. And now, you know, generally, this is not a full, fast rule. Usually that week during Christmas is kind of quiet. So we're here on December 16th, on the evening of December 16th. It would not surprise me at all now if the Braves don't do anything until January. Like, I think the Braves are going to do something. I highly doubt this is going to be the roster, because obviously in the outfield, even if that something is signing Nick Markakis or something else like as a stopgap, they have to do something else between now and opening day, because the outfield is the outfield right now. But, you know, did that surprise you at all? I thought I was supposed to say that out loud. It didn't surprise me, but, like, you know, as usual, fans were like, really? Nothing until January? I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. And by the way, he doesn't leak. So him saying that is like, relax, everybody, maybe a little bit. I don't know. It kind of struck me as kind of an odd statement to make, because it was like on December 7th or something. Like, oh, by the way, it may not be till January. It's like, that's kind of weird to say, but maybe not.
I wasn't that surprised, mainly because there are parts of this market, this offseason, like free agent trade market, that moved very quickly, but it was only parts. Like, it seemed like guys that had sort of weird limited markets in a lot of ways that got their deals done. I think that, like, for example, Andrew McCutchen, like, I am surprised that there was any delay in his camp at all to sign a 3-year $50 million deal, right?
That was a lot of money.
I thought he was like a guy that was going to get 2 years. Maybe, I mean, not like a terrible annual value, but like, I didn't think he was going to get that. So that deal makes a ton of sense for him to sign right away. But I think there's going to be a little bit of a standoff. I mean, we still don't know where Bryce Harper is going to be playing. We still don't know where Manny Machado is going to be playing. We still don't know where Yasmani Grandal is going to be playing, which is a big deal with the GT Real Muto market, because Grandal is a really good catcher too. And there's teams that could feasibly be in play for him that would also be in play for Real Muto. So there's kind of like this like weird tension in the market as kind of like where the big dominoes are going to fall, and then the rest can follow them. You know, there's players that I think the Braves would be interested in, but I think that they have to kind of come down. They're not going to be paying the early entry price of, so that way they can get their dibs on them first, because no one's really paying those prices except for a few specific guys. You know, Patrick Corbin got a big deal, and you know, a few other guys got decent deals.
It's gone now, though. I think as you're kind of saying there, like, it's now that you're past the winter meetings, like, the market's going to be tepid.
Yeah, it's the luxury market, which is Manny Machado and Bryce Harper right now, and then there's guys like Michael Brantley and guys like that who might be thinking, hey, you know, I might be able to get one of those kind of those 3-year $50 million deals too. And that market just might not be there for that. And teams are going to be looking to see what kind of value they can get. And there's going to be a little bit of a waiting game. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was going to stay into January. And if that's what Anthopoulos wants to do, if he wants to sign a couple, maybe a reliever, maybe a lower to mid-level starter, and maybe an outfielder, it doesn't make sense for him to try to jump and like just claim his guy, but rather get the best value and try to, like, you know, figure out what money he's going to have and then what he has to cover in trade.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's not a situation where they have to act quickly. I know the fan base, judging by the questions, judging by your mentions and my mentions and Talking Chop mentions, people are really sort of frustrated is the wrong word. Well, maybe frustrated, but just kind of antsy. Like, it's kind of what always happens. People always want news. And during the copy era, there was always news, which I think probably spoiled the fan base a little bit. You know, for better or worse, there was always a trade somewhere. And with Anthopoulos, aside from the stuff about Real Muto, which is mostly just leaks about them not wanting him, like, it's not like they're really leaking anything at all. Like, occasionally you'll get a player agent sounding leak, like one we're going to talk about in a second with Nick Castellanos. Other than that, there really isn't much to go on. So fans are just bored, maybe. Like, they're just kind of like, do something now, please. And they see the National League East, too, like, kind of blowing up. The Nats and the Mets have been very active, and that can kind of scare people, too.
Well, I mean, there is that, and it's, I mean, look, if the Braves had just delayed the Josh Donaldson signing until if that had just happened in the winter meetings, everyone would be thrilled.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? It's just a timing issue, and I understand everyone. Like, look, the Mets are making some real moves, and I know the joke's the old Mets because inevitably there's going to be some weird injuries and they're going to do some dumb stuff because that's just what happens with the Mets. But they're making real moves, and that team is not going to be a bad team next year. And you still have the Nationals and the Phillies. They've made some moves, and they have a lot of money, and they're kind of playing in some dangerous waters with the Bryce Harper and Manny Machado market where, you know, they could get a really high impact player that would make a difference very quickly. But I mean, the NL East is going to be hard, but the Braves are still the defending champs, and they added a guy at $23 million next year that won an MVP a couple years ago and is still probably one of the better hitters in the entire league. So I don't know what to tell you, those of you that are frustrated, other than to say that there's not a lot of movement happening league-wide right now, and the movement that's happening is probably movement that shouldn't be happening at the rate that it is. So be happy that you have a general manager that's like being a responsible steward rather than just being a guy that, you know, finds his guy and then throws stupid money at him, because in two seasons when that contract is kind of coming due and that guy is older or whatever, you would be very upset that these moves would have been made.
Yeah, I mean, your point about Donaldson is a perfect one. It's sort of to encapsulate the whole situation. That deal happened, those two deals, I should say, happened on November 26th when nothing else in baseball was happening. The Braves kind of owned that entire day and an entire, like, 2 or 3 day period. And if those deals had happened last week, no one would care. Like, I think people, not that they've forgotten, but Josh Donaldson signing is a huge domino. Like, he isn't Bryce Harper.
It's a big deal.
He's not Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, but, you know, without question, he was a top 10 free agent on the market, and the Braves already signed that guy. So it's not like, it's just kind of weird to say, like, they haven't done anything. Like, well, actually, they signed a top 10 guy in the free agent market. It was a one-year deal. I get that.
And some would say top five.
If he's the guy he's been pre-injury, and even at the end of last season, he is a top five free agent. Like, as you mentioned before, I think, he's a former MVP for a reason. That was not a fluke award. Like, he was an MVP-level player very recently. So I'm not projecting that necessarily for next year, but just to go back to the point, like, Donaldson was a big-time signing, and it just happened to occur in November instead of December. So people are now like, all right, what's number two? And people got their hopes up a lot, which I understand, but just be patient, people. That's kind of what we're going to say here. I'm not a big if it's March and this is the roster, then go ahead and freak out. But until then...
You'll be hearing from us on that matter, too, because, I mean, I'm willing to be patient in terms of, like, you know, spreading the money around. But I do think that when you have a window like this where you have young players and you have assets that you can go get players, that if you're not making moves to improve the roster, not just for, like, a one-year deal, like a Donaldson deal, but, like, trying to make plays for players that are under control, then, like, you are doing a disservice to your fan base and you're doing a disservice to the window that you have, because those windows close much quicker than I think people realize. It's not like you're not guaranteed a decade of dominance because you're the number one farm system in the league. It's just
this is absolutely a big winner. I mean, we've said that. I try not to. I know you do too. We try to not be like hot take guys. We're going to not come on here and bang the drum about how this is like the biggest offseason in the history of the Atlanta Braves. I'm not going to do that. But it's a big offseason. They have to do some things. Donaldson was a very nice first step, but they have some holes that just have to be filled. They can get creative too. Like, Real Muto is a luxury move if they go ahead and do that. But corner outfield is a move that has to happen. Like, they don't have anybody right now that can start a corner outfield spot. They have Adam Duvall is not a starting caliber corner outfielder on a team that is trying to win this World Series this year.
Moving Julio Teheran out of the rotation might be something that would be even higher priority for me than getting Real Muto, honestly.
One for one, that's probably true. I do think, and I've said this before, I don't think Julio would just kill you. Like, I think if he's your fifth starter, it's not the end of the world, but he's also taking innings away from guys who you want to see. So there's a trade-off there. I think he would help a lot of teams, actually. He's not underpaid anymore in the way that he used to be, but he's also not like crazily overpaid either for what he kind of is. Like, he's not a good pitcher. He's not a good pitcher in capital letters good, but he's an acceptable fifth starter on a lot of teams. Just the Braves have so many young arms that he's just kind of in the way. So
that's more my bigger point is just that we have so many, we have limited slots, and one of them's taken up by a guy who's just not particularly good anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I still think if it's me, I think the most likely scenario is a deal that they basically just dump Julio to a team for like a C-level prospect and just call it a day, basically just give him away. and not have to pay too much to do it. But I don't think that's a bad deal on either side of the table, is what I'll say. So, all right, we can get off of that briefly, at least, and we'll come back to it probably in some form or fashion. But one trade, I'm not sure if this is even a rumor, but the Braves, Mark Bowman, again, Mark Bowman, good friend of the podcast, was quoted as saying that the Braves are potentially listening on Dansby Swanson right now. He did say within that same tweet slash report that there's people inside the organization that are hesitant to move him, which is not a surprise. He's an interesting prospect, former number one overall pick, great defender, shortstop, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, nothing surprises me when you're talking about hearing guys being available-ish, except for like Acuna and Freeman. Everybody should be available-ish. Did that surprise you at all? And what'd you make of it? I didn't think much of it, but a lot of reaction was like, oh, really? They're going to trade Dansby? Like, no, listening on him does not mean they're going to trade him. But did you have any reaction to that little buzz that came out?
I mean, I thought it was a little silly that people were like genuinely like either A, excited, or B, like upset that this was actually a thing. Like, those same people would say the only people that should be untradeable are Acuna and Freeman were the ones that were upset about Dansby Swanson potentially being in a trade rumor. And my point on the whole thing, and it drives me crazy, because my whole point on it was, is that Dansby is a flawed but talented player. And that while you can't, he has done nothing to make you say that he's untouchable, because there's some people that would like happily slot Johan Camargo as the starting shortstop right now. And there are a lot of reasons to think that what Dansby is right now is who the guy is who he is, you know, his approach against certain types of pitches and just kind of his overall, you know, trends and sort of things like that. Like, it makes you wonder, maybe this is just kind of the hitter that he is. And is that good enough? And for a lot of teams that is, and for others it isn't. And we can debate as to whether or not Camargo, or whether or not sliding Ozzy over and putting Camargo at second, whether or not those options would be better. The Braves would be doing a disservice to everyone if they weren't, say, if someone were to like call about Ozzy Albies, what the reporting it seemed to be is that the Braves were shifting that attention to talking about Dansby. That doesn't necessarily mean that they want to move Dansby. It just means that between the two guys, they would rather move Dansby and then kind of...
Which is pretty clear, by the way. Like,
and that's not... Like, that's what they should be saying.
That makes sense. I mean, Ozzy is younger and has been better at the major league level. It's not a huge surprise there. Like, I've been a Dansby defender. You know, if you look at the numbers from this year, he's not hit the ball. Like, he doesn't hit, and he hasn't yet. I'm not sure that I would close the door on him hitting, but for the last two seasons, he's been a bad hitter. With that said, this year he was a two-win player while not hitting. So if you believe in his bat at all, he's still a useful player. But it's very easy to see why people are split on Swanson. If you care about defense, you probably like Swanson more than if you don't. If you are someone who believes in guys longer in terms of prospect status, you might believe on him. But if you have a short leash, you won't. So there's kind of pretty clear dividing lines here. He was a capable major league starter last year, regardless. He was a two-win player. That's a fine starter, making no money. That's fine. But he'll be 25.
And that has real trade value. Like, if the Braves were just going to dump him for nothing, I'd be irate.
And they're not going to ever do that. That's not happening. No. Like, and there's a whole conversation also after that when there was like a sub conversation about what happens if they did trade him, whether they go to Camargo or whether they go to Ozzy at shortstop. That's one that we'll save for later, I promise. If that actually happens, we'll talk about it. But for now, Dansby being available is not a huge surprise. Again, everyone should be available. It just makes it seem like guys are like, they're not sitting there offering him Swanson to anyone that wants him. Like, they're willing to take calls. That's not the same thing. Like, it's a very important distinction. I think Julio is available in all caps. Dansby's not available in all caps. He's someone who they would take calls on. Because, again, I think he even said something like, everyone but Ronald or Freeman or something like that. There was some comment like, he might got asked if someone was untouchable, and he was kind of like Ronald and Freddie or something like that. So it's not, I don't know. It's just funny to hear people talk about this stuff, because it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that the entire roster sans those two guys are available. That's just the way this works. Like, there are certain guys who are definitely on a higher plane. Like, Ozzy is on a higher plane. I think Folty is on a higher plane. There are guys who are definitely not as available as other guys are. But if you get offered something crazy for Ozzy, or you get offered something crazy for Folty or somebody else, you're going to take it. Because why wouldn't you? Like, it's the only two guys where I would genuinely, like, fall on the floor if they got traded are Ronald and Freddie.
Yep.
That's it. I mean,
those are the two guys. That's it.
I mean, I'd be surprised if they traded Ozzy. I would. But I wouldn't be, like, stunned beyond measure. You know what I mean? Like, no, they have two premium assets. And everybody else, they have really good assets. Even the prospects. Like, now that Ronald Acuna is not a prospect anymore, they don't have a prospect available that I would be stunned if they traded him. There's not, that guy doesn't exist. They have good, they have really good prospects, but they, there's not one guy that I'd be like, nope, can't trade that guy. Doesn't exist.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I just think that the part of the problem that making their guys quote unquote available is that they have so many guys that are, have major league experience with a ton of team control. So even if they're not, like, you know, perennial Cy Young candidates or perennial MVP candidates. I mean, if a guy's a two or three win player and he has 6 years of team control left, like, you're that's a tough sell just to move him at all, let alone.
That's been a theme of this podcast for the last 3 years. Yeah. We've been doing it. We've been preaching that even with guys that we don't necessarily, at least I'll speak for myself, that I don't necessarily think are like star level players. I mean, we said about Julio for a long time. Julio was under control for a long time. We liked that a lot about him. Ender Inciarte, who I've been critical of as a hitter, has a ton of value because he's making very little money, and he's a proven, like, full-fledged starting outfielder. Like, awesome defender, average-ish hitter. That's a great package for someone who makes, like, $7 million a year. Like, team control really matters. And Dansby is a perfect example because even if you just think that he's the guy he was last year, we just assume he's that guy. He's a two-win player for all eternity. The next 4, 5, 6 years, that's a huge value because he's making no money at all.
Yep.
So, anyway, even if you don't like Dansby, just take that into account when you're thinking about trading him and all that fun stuff. But I want to at least put that out there because that causes a stir, and I think you just hear the stuff in our voice there talking about it.
well, and it's, and just in the case of Dansby, let's assume he's a two-win player. He is not done with arbitration until 2022. He's going to make less than $600,000 the next 2 years.
And, I mean, again, just to say it one more time, even if he's a little bit worse than last year, that's a huge value. Like, he can't just not hit at all. Like, there's a line where you cross it.
That line was
2017, by the way. That line was 2 years ago when he was so bad at the plate that he was, like, borderline unplayable. Last year, he had an 80 WRC plus. That's not good. But if he does that and plays Gold Glove defense at shortstop, you're fine. And that's what happened. So between, it's kind of funny. They're in different situations because they're different ages and different levels of proven. But Swanson and Inciarte are very similar in the fact that neither of them hit last year. They both played great defense at premium positions. And I think people have trouble valuing them as a result. And they're both available, by the way, because Ender has been in all kinds of, not rumors, but, like, he's available.
Discussions, like, yeah.
The Braves would trade him because why wouldn't they trade him? Like, they're not, again, they may not be looking to trade him, but when you have Ronald Acuna, when you have Acuna on your team and Christian Pache in your farm system, you have to at least take calls on Ender and Ciarte. Like, that would be irresponsible not to. Same thing with Swanson. Like, if you, because, by the way, you have Ozzy Albies and Johan Camargo in your organization. And by the way, a nice callback to like 2 years ago, Ozzy Albies, more valuable shortstop than second base, Eric.
Indeed. We should have traded him. Getting better about it.
Here we go. Anyway, let's get off that. I had to get that out there one more time for fun. last thing on like pure, again, quote unquote news, Nick Castellanos got linked to the Braves within the last 2 weeks since we did the podcast. It came from John Morosi, who has a mixed track record, but because it's the Tigers, he's very dialed in on the Tigers. Morosi is a Detroit guy. He knows that team and organization very well, so that kind of perked a lot of us up. I think when it was him talking about a Tigers guy, we were kind of more interested. What do you make of him? He's obviously a good hitter, terrible outfielder, but young-ish and not expensive yet. So what do you make of Castellanos as like a potential target in a corner outfield spot?
So it's kind of... he's kind of like the anti-Dansby.
He's Matt Kemp.
Yeah, he's Matt Kemp with 1 year of team control, which matters a lot because that means that presumably the trade price would not be crazy.
Oh, and, almost certainly, because they're not trying to compete either. So I'm sure the price would not be huge.
Yeah, and that maybe like lower level prospects that could be interesting would be a little bit more appealing to a team like that. They're not trying to like turn around quickly. It's going to take a few years for that team to become relevant again. that's a tough one because on the one hand, I get it. And I think that, you know, the player that he was last year, if he was playing left field, I am fine in terms of overall value, what he does for a lineup and things like that. But the Braves have really They've really stressed defense in everything they've been doing, kind of like making sure that the players that they're putting on the field are at least defensively valuable, because they have so many young pitchers coming up that they want to kind of make sure that they're not just kind of giving away outs that would make it for a young guy who's not really used to that stage yet that could cause problems. And that makes it feel less likely. You have to really believe that your defensive, like, positioning, your defensive analytics, which, to be fair, did wonders for Nick Markakis last year, because he was legitimately pretty good on defense last year. Compared to what he was anyway. I'll say that much. And you have to really believe that that would make a difference for a guy like Castellanos. And that's tough, because I'm skeptical that he's ever going to be a good defensive player. But I also know
he won't be good. I mean, that's kind of the ship has sailed there.
Well, let me rephrase. I'm not sure he could ever get to average. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just for reference, last year, Castellanos, at the age of, I believe he was, he was 26 for last season. He had a 130 WRC+, which is awesome. He had 23 home runs. He was a very, very good hitter. He slugged 500. But defensively, he was among the worst players in baseball. You know, he got killed by every metric, essentially, defensively. And as a result of that, you have this awesome hitter that you might think would be like a 6-win player, ends up being a 3-win player because he was so bad on defense. So I do kind of agree with you that it would be not really Bravesy to do this, because defense has been a priority. And if you listen to this podcast for any length of time, you would know that we value defense, I think. We talk about that a lot. I think Matt Kemp's defense was a point of contention for a long time as a result of that. And there's a reason why I made the Kemp comparison. And that's because if you assume Castellanos is that defender that we saw last year, he's Matt Kemp, but maybe a little bit better hitter, which is, again, a useful player, but it's frustrating in a lot of ways. I do think you could hide him a little bit in an outfield that has Inciarte and Acuna in it. Like, there's a way to minimize him a little bit with shifting and just having those two incredible defensive kind of guys out there with him. I think there is room on this team for one bad defender. Because right now, as constructed, the Braves, the guys who we know are around at this moment are Acuna, Inciarte, Donaldson Camargo at third, Swanson, Albies, Freeman, and the catcher spot. There's no bad defender there anywhere. So I think you can go with one bad defender. I'm okay with that. But as you mentioned, just as a callback to where we were a couple minutes ago, it's all about price here. If he's your best option, if you kind of are out of options and you don't like the Brantley price and you don't like the trade options elsewhere, he's better than what you have now because you don't have anything right now. I think if it's between bringing Markakis back or trading for Castellanos, I'll take Castellanos at a reasonable price. Again, it's all about market. But if we assume it's a very reasonable trade package because of only 1 year of control, I would choose that option. But if it's him versus someone you can get on a pretty decent longer-term contract that isn't a defensive liability, you might lean in that way. So it's all about factors that we don't know. It's all about what you can get him for. It's all about what else is out there. I would be okay with him being the opening day left/right fielder, whichever one they choose. But there's some stuff you have to get past, and I think the Braves might not be willing to deal with his defense. I think they know more than we do about it, but when every metric is kind of in agreement that you're just terrible, like actually terrible, not just bad, like terrible last year defensively, there may not be a point where you can hide that at all.
No, I agree. It's tough. That's a tough call. I would probably trade for him, but like my threshold for how much I'm willing to pay is pretty low.
Again, like, yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I would do it because A, his bat I think is legit, and B, I don't think the price point is all that high. I don't think that. But if it is, then you just pass. That's kind of what it comes down to. So interesting name, at least. He's at least someone who is more off the radar. We've talked a ton about Brantley. We talked a lot about McCutcheon before he got signed. Castellanos kind of came out of left field, I guess figuratively and literally, but an interesting player to at least discuss. Okay, before we get to the mailbag, a couple of just quick hitters here. The Braves, since last time we talked about this, which is a couple weeks now, hired a pitching coach. It's Rick Kranitz. I have no thoughts on this, to be honest with you. It's like, all right, cool, pitching coach. That's kind of where I am with it. But maybe you have more than I do, Eric.
I mean, I don't know enough about Kranitz. I know that he's been around for a long time and did a lot of work with trying to get how the Phillies were doing things last season, which I'm not sure how much of the constant pitching changes was more just kind of organizationally driven or how much he had a hand say in it. I will say, though, that I like having a pitching coach that at the very least was given advanced analytical data and information and did something with it when he was over there in Philadelphia. Now, whether or not that was correct, that's actually something that he's particularly good at, I have actual no idea. All I know is that I'm glad that there's someone that is taking that post, and ultimately that's going to be something we're not going to be able to really judge the overall effects of for another, for basically until like midseason, when we kind of know how he works with the pitchers and how well they're prepared and conditioned and all that stuff. But I mean, Aaron Nola was really good, so I assume.
Yes, he was.
So and people seem to think that Kranitz had a big hand in that. So if that's if he's willing to give our guys a similar bounce, then I'm all for it. But honestly, I just don't know enough about Kranitz. And the way that the Phillies kind of ran their pitching staff last year was really weird, and I don't know how much that was driven by him.
Yeah, and the Phillies kept on their assistant pitching coach, is that correct? They promoted that guy?
Yeah.
They really like, apparently. So this wasn't like a full ouster. They kind of just liked the other guy better, which I, whatever. So I just don't have too much in the way. I don't want to fake this because I just don't know that much, and we'll see what happens there. I just want to at least note it, so we haven't talked about it at all. Got a couple questions about that, so there we are. One other piece of news, Rio Ruiz is no longer with us in terms of the Braves, now in Baltimore. No big surprise for Rio, because he was not a part of the plan long term. I will ask you real quickly, as the prospect guru that you are, he'll be 25 in May. Is it just over for Rio? Is there a path for him to be a major leaguer moving forward?
He has to become at least serviceable against lefties, because he's not good enough against righties to be kind of a guy you can even platoon. He has to kind of at least have some sort of a semblance of a well-rounded game against lefties and righties, and he just looks so bad against lefties. And he has raw power, doesn't really show up in games. He's kind of more of a line drivey hitter. Is a pretty good fielder, but isn't going to win Gold Gloves. Like, maybe he can carve out a role in the future as a bench bat, but it's just, I don't see it happening. And it's a shame, because he seems like a guy that people seem to really like a lot, and works really hard, and he has athleticism and strength, and you want to, and every once in a while he gets a hold of a ball and like, okay, here it comes. This is when he kind of goes on a tear, and it just never happened. So no, I'm not surprised he was going to lose a 40-man roster spot. I just didn't think he was going to be even see much time on the bench. They had pretty seemingly given up on him, which is pretty fair at this point. He hasn't hit for a while. And, his flaws are real and persistent. So it stinks, because I've been covering Rio for a long time. And since since he first came over and was, frustrating me with his, crazy high ability to draw walks, but his inability to make contact with baseballs, it's been years now. And so it's going to kind of stink seeing him in a different uniform. And I hope he does really, really well. But, ultimately he wasn't in the plans. So,
yeah, that's kind of. All I have on as well, but just for reference, he and Dansby are the same age. So people that are freaking out about Dansby like being a finished product, Rio's the same age and has never been a major league player. So yeah, it might be over. I hope it's not. I've always kind of liked him in some ways, not as a huge, like, I feel like we were lower on him than the consensus when he was like the number three prospect in the system. And then when he wasn't, it was like, actually, he's not bad. Don't give up on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's an in the teens guy, like until he became no longer a prospect. But
sure, and by the way, at almost 25, he's not a prospect anymore. Like, it's just kind of, hopefully he figures it out. He might have one more chance, maybe two, like if something goes weird. But he's got to show more than he's shown, and that's how you end up in Baltimore. By the way, Baltimore's a good spot for him because they don't have a lot of talent.
Yeah, so I'm about to say he'll get some playing time.
Yeah, so he'll have a chance.
They're gonna be bad for a while.
Yeah, they're really bad. Okay, to the mailbag we go. A couple questions, then we'll get out of here. One comes from Steve, and he asks, why do I keep hearing that we need to keep all of our prospects? There needs to be at least one big trade to move some arms. And at one point, are they all blocked and meaning from potential and gaining max value? So the big question is, Eric, why does he keep hearing that we need to keep all of our prospects?
Well, Steve, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that you're not following the correct people, and you're not having the right people in your life. What you need to do is get onto Google and search Talking Chop Minor League Logjam, and you will find an article written by yours truly where I make the exact same argument that that you are, is that there was going to have to be some moves made, and it's causing it's not fake, like a fake problem to have, like, oh, well, it's really a problem to have so many guys. Right now, there are too many starting pitchers to put in slots, which affects how people are going to be, like, how pitchers are going to be moved up and down in the organization this offseason and going into next season, which is already causing some prospects to be a little bit miffed, not only because they're not sure if they're going to be moved up maybe like they should be, but also because there's also guys that might get moved into the bullpen just to put them at the quote-unquote appropriate level, which is going to take bullpen slots away from relievers that are wanting to move up too. It's a real issue. And I still think they're going to make moves, though. Like, make no mistake. I wrote the article is that this offseason has this as a major thing or a real thing. But I still think that they're going to make moves that will make this kind of sort itself out. But you're right. It's a very real thing. It's particularly on the pitching side. Not so much a problem on the position player side. But in terms of pitching, yeah, it's a real thing. There are plenty of guys who have real claims to AAA starting pitching spots. And a bunch of guys who have real claims to AA rotation spots, and there's just not that many spots, so you just have to move on with some guys.
To be sure, and I do think that at some point they're going to make a deal. They haven't really done that recently, where they just kind of make the push-in move with prospects. It's going to happen at some point. I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but I will just echo what Eric said and kind of move on from there. Next question from Patrick, and he says, if the rumors prove to be true and the Dodgers sign Bryce Harper, would that bring Yasiel Puig's price down and make him a potential Braves target? There's been some mixed stuff. This is me now. There's been some mixed stuff on Puig. A couple people have hinted that he might be a target-ish for the Braves, maybe a fallback option. Others have said no way. I am tempted to say the target-ish thing. That's just me reading between the lines a little bit. And he's an intriguing enough player where if the market kind of just gets weird in the outfield, I would be okay with Puig as a target because I think he can play. But what do you think about this?
I think if the Dodgers get Bryce Harper, then they would be
Puig
silly.
Puig will be very available if that happens.
Yeah, he will in fact be available, and the Braves would be like negligent to not check in because he has positive value. I understand that people don't like him as a person, but those are the same people that would not want to sign Bryce Harper because they don't like him as a person either.
Oh, and by the way, Puig, like, by all accounts, is a lot better with his, like, personality stuff now than he was when he first arrived. Like, he had a lot, there was some really positive stories done about Puig last year when they're making their run about his maturity level. He's a little bit older than he was when he got here, obviously. He's 28 now. He's like kind of more of an adult now from all of the reporting. I don't know the man. I know what you're saying is true, and then a lot of Braves fans, like, whenever you say his name, people freak out in
they
a similar
do.
Way to Harper. But if you look at the player, and if you believe some of the buzz that's coming out of LA that he's sort of different, like a different guy now who's more mature, the player is very interesting in a lot of ways. He can really hit the baseball.
Yeah, and it was funny. I actually did I just did like a Q&A on my Twitter account just because I was bored one afternoon, one evening or something like that. And someone asked me about Puig, and I'm like, I think that they'll very much check in on him. I don't think he'll be super expensive, and he could be a useful player. And I got like several responses that were just the word no. Like, I was the one deciding this. Like, and I'm
Eric,
and
why did you make the Braves call on Yasiel Puig?
Apparently, and more importantly, like, that it was just settled. Like, well, there's just no possible way that Puig could be a good player for the Atlanta Braves in 2019, which is like, and there's some clear reason why that's true. It's just not. You are not correct if you think that he's just going to be some clubhouse cancer that's going to hit 150 for the Braves in 2019 if he becomes a Brave. That is not correct. He is a good baseball player.
Yeah, the last two seasons, by the way, 2017 in full-time play, he had a 117 WRC+. He hit 28 home runs, 15 steals, and about a 3-win player on Fangraphs. This last year, he played a little bit less because they had this incredible wealth of talent, but he was actually even better on a per plate appearance basis. 23 home runs, 15 steals, and 444 plate appearances. That's really, really good. A 123 WRC+. So I get the skepticism to some degree, but there's no question that he's good at baseball. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
There just isn't.
The reason why the Dodgers would move him isn't because he's a clubhouse problem. It's because that, like, they're actually kind of running out of – somehow they found a way to run out of money, especially if Bryce Harper's in their plans. And, like, he's a guy that in his last year of arbitration is not going to be particularly cheap. But so he's the guy like on the last year of the deal. He's the kind of guy that you would trade off to kind of, you know, make a little bit of room both on your roster and in terms of your payroll. That's just what would happen. It's not because he's like, you know, the dregs and you would, you know, re-sign Nick Markakis before you'd bring him back.
No, I would not do that. Okay. Moving along. Last question. We've done plenty on most of this stuff. So we'll get one more. This comes from Bill. And he asks, plainly, will any relief pitchers be pursued this offseason? And he says, I think the change in coaching staff, as well as Darren O'Day being healthy and supplementing with potentially with Max Fried in a super reliever role, would be a plausible solution. In addition to this, this is me talking now, we got a lot of questions about closer. And I think, for me, closer is not going to be a priority. That's just something that I'm just not going to do. Like, the Kimbrel stuff is still out there. Until Kimbrel signs, people will still be asking about Kimbrel. He has the obvious connection to Atlanta, etc. But what do you make of the reliever market? Is this a priority? Should it be a priority? And I do want to at least plug one thing from Talking Chop along the way. But what do you think about this question?
So I never thought that Kimbrel was realistic. And when I keep hearing over and over again that he wants a 6-year deal, I'm like, I definitely don't think the Braves should be
out on him.
Yeah, I don't want any part of that. Unless it's like
$2 million
6 years
and $30 million total, which is not going to happen.
Yeah. He's like, it's just not that. That is not feasible, especially for a guy of his caliber. If he thinks he can get that from somebody, he absolutely should do it, and I will remember him fondly as his days as a Brave. But I don't want the Braves to have that contract anywhere on their payroll. I have kind of coveted guys like Adam Ottavino's and guys like that, but it's tough because I don't really know what the reliever market looks like right now. Like, that's a move market that hasn't really made. Like Familia signed back with the Mets with like a 3-year, $30 million deal. That's $10 million a year for a guy of Familia's. I would be in for a guy of that level at that price for sure. But I don't know how many of those guys are actually available and whether or not Familia was just wanting to kind of get back with the Mets. That's just kind of what he wanted to do, and maybe that price wasn't available to other teams. Which, if that's the case, I mean, I am also open to the idea that Darren O'Day was a very good reliever for a long time. Had a hamstring injury, which isn't like an elbow, isn't a shoulder. I don't necessarily think that's going to be a chronic problem that he's going to have to deal with next year, and that he should be pretty good. So that's an addition to the bullpen. And I agree that Fried being in the bullpen is something I'm interested in, because he can be a long man, and I think his stuff plays up in the bullpen to at least get started to kind of manage his issue with blisters and stuff like that. So limiting his innings in that way seems very useful. So overall, I agree with the idea of like the internal options that the Braves have, but I still think they need to be exploring some options. I just don't know if they necessarily need to be messing around that top tier of the market, because it seems like that's pretty pricey.
Yeah, I agree. And in general, relievers are weird to figure out, number one, on the market, which is why I never want to pay for them. Like, it's kind of sounds counterintuitive to some degree that there's always going to be some mystery there. And in theory, if you like just knew a guy was going to be good, that would solve your problem. But there's just a lot of volatility there. One of the things that I want to get out there was that the great Ivan wrote about not using big resources in free agency with relievers this week on the site. So please read that. It goes into more depth with some graphs and things like that, as Ivan as always want to do. It's very, very good and echoes what I always want to say. So I wouldn't be paying big for relievers. I just won't do it. And if you have to do it, go short term on a contract. I don't want to be giving years and dollars to a reliever. That's kind of where I just won't go there. And by the way, I think the combination of Minter and Vizcaino is better than some people think it is. Like, it's not incredible by any means, and the Braves could certainly benefit from a better back end of the bullpen. But as he mentions in the question, Darren O'Day helps, and I just think that they're okay right now. I mean, they need more depth in the bullpen, but like, there's no reason to go out and panic pay for Craig Kimbrel. Like, Ottavino would be awesome if you can get him a realistic contract.
I think he's going to be expensive. That's my problem.
I do too. I mean, Kimbrel we know is going to be expensive. Like, that's why I'm just out on Kimbrel. Like, he's awesome, but because of where we just assume and everyone assumes that price point's going to be, I just want nothing to do with that. If you get a deal on somebody, fine. And if not, you just figure it out. Like, it's not, for me, it's kind of like catcher. I think catcher and relievers are the two spots where I just don't want to go big. And they happen to be spots that people want to talk about a lot. And this is my personal philosophy. I would not be trying to pay market value for either position.
I do think that if you aren't going to go for relievers, that you need to give like real starting pitching prospects who have real stuff. You have to have them in there. You can't have them just have, 38-year-old retreads in, like the Peter Moylands of the world. don't need to be running, you know.
You can have a couple of those guys, but yeah, I agree. Like, the question mentions Max Fried. That's just a theory. I mean, it doesn't have to be Max Fried, but he'd be really good in the bullpen. We've seen him do that before. There are guys in this system that would work.
If you decide that Touki Toussaint does not need to be in your 2019 rotation, which I'm skeptical as to why you'd make that decision, but if you decide that he is not in your 2019 rotation, then he should be in your 2019 bullpen for sure.
Yeah, we've seen guys do that. I mean, I think people really think that once a guy goes to the bullpen, they can't come back, and that's just not true. We've seen it happen numerous times. David Price was a reliever when he came up. Adam Wainwright was a closer.
Chris Sale
was a reliever. Like, you've seen it. I don't love it as a strategy, like, too early, but if your plan all along is to, all right, guys, we don't have a spot for you, but you're just too good for AAA, so we're going to use you in our bullpen. If you're contending, which the Braves are now, I'm okay with it. I didn't like it when the Braves weren't contending, and there was a lot of this buzz about using prospects in the bullpen. I didn't love that, but now that you're trying to win and every single game matters, you have to put guys that are good in the bullpen. Like, whether, I mean, you know the prospects better than I do, but using some of your guys that are not getting in the rotation for the bullpen does make a ton of sense. And at the very least, I'd like to see them use that, like the swing starter spot on Max Fried or somebody like that. If they're going to be in the rotation, instead of using, you know, random veteran X that's like, you know what he's going to be, why not try Fried? Why not try Touki? Somebody else in that role? Because, A, that's, they're more stretched out that way, and B, they're probably just going to be better.
I agree with that, and I think that there are some starting pitching prospects that they would not do well in the bullpen, like guys that, like, maybe
Colby Allard.
Colby Allard would not be a good guy.
He's like the number one example of that.
Yeah, run out there in the eighth inning. He still has a chance to be. I still think he has a chance to be a good starter, or at least a serviceable one.
But he is not the bullpen guy.
He has a narrow path, and you don't want a guy that's kind of living in the low 90s and like a location guy, running out there in the eighth inning, because that's just not going to work out particularly well a lot of the time.
He is like the perfect prospect in maybe all of baseball that would be like never use that guy in the bullpen. He's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, but you know, feasibly could be a starter, and then, you know, some guys just don't like moving back and forth. Like, they feel like that their status as a starter or their status as a reliever, like that's something that's like a mentality for them. And, you know, the Braves will know more than we would as to kind of, yes, what guys you think would adapt to that more than others. But I know there's guys who, like, you know, have started games in the minor leagues and they're just like, I am not a starter. Like, this does not work for me in terms of how I prepare and how I think about games. And then vice versa too. You know, like, guys, like, you know, I am not a reliever. This is weird. And I'm like, the results aren't good, and people make assumptions about them as pitchers when in reality, a big chunk of it is like their routines are all thrown off. So I get that, why you have to kind of know your guys, and they have to kind of like be adequately prepared for the roles they're going to be in. But I think that the Braves would be able to do that in this case.
For sure. So to answer the question, I'm sure they're looking at the bullpen market. That's a market that traditionally takes a while because there's just a lot of uncertainty there. So it's not, you kind of know who the best guys are, and they're all these closer types of big ticket prices. But that the next tier after that may not be signing until February. Like, it might take a while.
Yep.
January at least. Like, I'd be pretty surprised if the bullpen was just settled in January. It's going to take a little bit. So that's one spot where you have to be patient, because even into March, like, stuff can happen in the bullpen market. Guys will get DFA that you wouldn't expect. They don't make the team. That might be interesting. Your Sam Freeman types that are better than that sometimes. But the bullpen will be unsettled until March, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Or just guys that people are trying to sneak into the minors, into AAA, and then they fail.
Yeah.
And then then the Braves find them and like, oh yeah, we'll take him.
Every year, like, teams can find fifth starters and bullpen guys in March. Like, they're available. Anibal Sanchez last year.
Yep.
Was just out there chilling.
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks. It was like 2 weeks until like spring training was ended, and the Braves like snatched him up, and he was one of our better starters last year.
Yeah, I thought nothing of it. I mean, nobody thought anything of it. It was like, oh, that guy was pretty good 3 years ago. Give him a shot. That's fine. We never thought he was going to be good.
He'll fill in until Gohara's ready. That was the biggest thing.
It was. I mean, no, and that's true. And by the way, Gohara's a guy who might be that kind of bullpen swing piece too.
Yep.
I'm glad you said that name out loud, because if they think he's not going to be a starter, that's a guy who might be nasty in the bullpen.
Yeah, that's a guy who throws 98 with a backdoor slider. So
from the left side. Yep. So yeah, he'd be filthy. Anyway, I hope that answers the question. But you know, I guess the short version is just hold your breath because relievers are going to be taking a while. All right, Eric. Well, we've plugged some stuff. We've talked about a lot of stuff. Anything that we did not hit on that you want to touch on? Otherwise, let's just get out of here. I mean, it's almost Christmas time.
It's almost Christmas time. It's unlikely that I will be on the show until after the holidays, unless something crazy happens. And in which case, happy holidays to all of you. Really appreciate all of you that's listening to us. It's kind of wild the level of support you guys give us, and it's something that we don't take for granted. So thank you all. I hope you all have a really happy holidays. Travel safe. I know that there's places, the weather's a little bit worse than here, down here in Georgia. And I want everyone to get back where they celebrate their time with their families during this holiday season and get there and back safely. So make sure you have happy holidays, and, thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, sir. And just as a podcast-wide announcement, a week from today, is the 23rd of December. There is a chance I can do a podcast that day, but probably not. I'm actually traveling for work that weekend, next weekend. So, in short, there's a chance we don't record again until after Christmas. If something happens, like if anything happens, I will probably do an emergency pod of sorts and catch up on everything. But if we go through another week plus, and this could happen as we outlined earlier in the pod, if nothing happens between now and Christmas, we will not have another podcast. So just keep that in mind. Please subscribe so that you know when it's coming. And also follow us on Twitter. I will tell you guys when it's coming. Also the Talking Chop account. Also Eric's account at Leprechaun. Please follow us all. But there is a chance we will not have a podcast until after Christmas. So if that happens, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you like to celebrate. We will wish you the best of that. And we'll be back in the near future. And hopefully if something happens, I promise, it might not be Eric and I, but it'll be me and somebody, Scott or something, if something happens. So when Real Muto gets traded Monday morning, we will have a new podcast on Monday night. But aside from that, thank you, Eric, for your time, as always. Again, please subscribe. Tell all your friends, by the way. I know you have baseball fan friends, if you're listening to this podcast, Braves fan friends. If they haven't found the show yet, please tell them about it. If they don't like it, that's fine, but give them a chance. Let them know that these two guys or three guys or four guys that talk on the podcast, you might like them. So tell your friends. Thank you, everybody. Happy holidays, and we'll see you guys in the near future.